All right. Hello and good evening or good morning, depending on where you are, to those who have joined us. And thank you for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast Friday Live. My name is Walter Latham, and I'm joined by Michelle Sweeney McComb. And we're here every Friday at 6 p.m. All right. We also do a rebroadcast of the Friday Live on Sundays, okay, at 3 p.m. And that's released out to all of the audio platforms. So wherever you get your podcast, you'll be able to pick this podcast up on Sunday after 3 p.m. So tell your friends and do follow, please. All right. On this week's show, we are very proud to have a lighter show. I know that a lot of the topics that we cover are maybe depressing, but being black or brown in this country is depressing. So, you know, we have a lot of topics that we talk about, and they're critical. They're critical to our survival, or they're critical to passing on the information that we need to pass on. And we try to call out things that are either negative, they have a negative impact, or they have a positive impact. All right. So either one, the TWW will call it out. And, you know, our mantra is an informed community is a powerful community. So with that said, and I'm not going to speak as long as my monologue normally goes, I'm just going to turn it over to Michelle because this is a great show that I'm looking forward to it. Awesome. I'm ecstatic. All right. Thrilled. Okay. So Michelle.
Wow. How excited are you, Walter?
How excited am I? Telling you, I'm very excited. I'm telling you right now, I'm getting ready to go to my engineering. Put my engineering hat on. Okay.
That's right. Don't forget those props.
There you go.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Walter. Right. And welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Please share this podcast with the bottom button on your right on your Instagram, Facebook, via text or email. You can share this live at this very moment. Today's guest, we have Chen and Asante, two amazing members of the group called Soul Science Lab. But right now I'm going to introduce our panel. But first, the Walt Weekly Friday Live is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skin Care, a handmade, all natural and organic product. Save 10% with discount code the Walt Weekly. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. His music can be found on all streaming platforms. The Walt Weekly panel members, today we have Gregory Coleman out of North Carolina, owner of Illumination Media and Technology and engineer at The Walt Weekly. We also have Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C., Sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps, combat veteran, senior consultant at B. Ernest Leadership and professional consultant.
Let us just say active duty.
Yes.
Marine.
That's
Sergeant.
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Let me correct that. And blessings, Ernest. Congratulations to you on that one. We have our next panel member, poet, and author Judy Andrews out of Brooklyn, New York. She is a most recent panel member that joined us less than a month ago. Welcome, Judy. And also next on the panel is Honorable Jean Anthony Edwards out of the 79th District in the Bronx, New York. Welcome to our panel members, Walter. Please give them a... Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. So we have a wonderful guest today. Like I said before, Soul Science Lab, SSL, is a music production company with an empowering approach to self-expression formed by artist, educator, and creator, director Chen Lo, a multi-instrumentalist, composer, and producer. Next one is Asante Amin of Soul Science Lab. His current projects include the duo's debut album, Plan for Paradise, Ten Tran, tribute to the life and music of John Coltrane. Soundtrack 63, a multimedia music production that explores the civil rights movements through images, video, jazz, hip hop, and soul music and poetry. And I'm going to tell you guys, I'm going to cut that off real quick. I have been to their performance, and that video imaging of the civil rights movement is so powerful. their music, mixed with their music, is incredible. You know, they are a force to reckon with. So with their collective credits, they have included work with Common, Erykah Badu, KRS-One, A Tribe Called Quest, and the legendary Last Poets. Soul Science is a multifaceted vision of the Afro future. Welcome, Soul Science Lab, Chen and Asante. Welcome to
the
show.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us.
That was a mouthful, right?
Thank you. Listen, I learned something new about myself every time I introduce.
We appreciated that. You know, out of Brooklyn, New York, always representing. Mm-hmm. And first, before our panel, let our panel have you, I just want you guys to briefly tell us about yourself, how you got started, how did you meet, and how long you've been together. I'll start with you, Chen.
Sure. All great questions. Both of us came to the city independently. I moved to the city in 2004 from Pittsburgh, going to grad school from NYU and doing some youth work in the community. Asante and I actually met each other at almost like a professional development for other teaching artists. We both were playing in our own bands, you know, had kind of our own presence on the scene. Right. And then as fate would have it, you know, the creator brought us together. We ended up both having changes in our living situation 1 year, and we ended up living together under the same roof. And that was the birth of Soul Science Lab. You know, after kind of just playing together hodgepodge, we came together living in the same roof, built a studio in our apartment, and started creating this identity. And Soundtrack 63 was the first project we created together at Soul Science Lab.
Amazing. Asante, your version now. Come on now. You know, you might have a different version.
Nah, my version is not too different than awesome. That version. Yeah, we happened to meet each other in, I met Chen not long after I moved to the city. I'm originally from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yes.
And came out here to go to, to just study music and pursue my passions. And as fate would have it, I got involved in the education space, music education, teaching band.
Right.
Teaching music production. And, you know, Chen is a scholar and an artist as well. And we happened to meet working for a nonprofit organization. We had similar friends, and we found ourselves sharing stages.
Yes.
And then collaborating with each other. And then I was in a situation where I didn't have any place to stay. His lease was up, and we both knew that, we just need to be in a scenario where we can like create music and create art in our living situation. And it was like, well, damn, if that's the case, how about we try to figure out how we can live together? And it kind of worked out.
Right.
And we were in the trenches together in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
The heart of it.
Yeah, for a number of years. And, we were both kind of like looking for our next, like, what's our next thing? What's going to happen? If nothing happens, we got to go home. And
yes.
we made the most of it, and we had an opportunity to create something that kind of changed the trajectory of both our artistry and our lives. And it led to us creating a company. And that thing was Soundtrack 63. And that was like in 2012 or 2013. And we've been rocking out and, just creating ever since.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. I got another question real quick before I turn it over to our panel. You know, during COVID, it was tough. You know, all musicians got hit hard, but you guys figured it out. You were doing, shows with Lincoln Center, online videos, I was on a few of them. And was that easy for you to transcend to that, or it took you a while to figure it out? How long did it take you to figure that out during COVID?
That's a really great question. I mean, honestly, the pandemic and COVID was hard. It hit us hard.
Yes.
You know, 2020 was a year we had planned for about 2 years prior. So we had opportunities on the table that we were like, these could change our lives. But when the pandemic hit, everything was canceled. And so we were left like, okay, so what do we do? Initially, a lot of the opportunities, the virtual opportunities were coming to us because we had previous relationships with some of these institutions. And so they said, you know, can you produce some virtual content for us since all these shows are canceled? So we started getting our feet wet in that space. And as we did, we made a decision. You know, we said, listen, if we're really seriously, you know, if we really know that music is our gift, and no matter what happens, we have to be able to share it with people and also be able to feed ourselves, we have to get creative with, you know, with how we're doing business and how we're moving in the world. And so we began to transition and transform, you know, a lot of our offerings from being available in person to being virtual. And a different side, a different chamber of our business was born. And it's been a blessing. You know, we say that the pandemic was like this hidden blessing because it opened up doors that it pushed us through doors that we wouldn't have pushed ourselves through had it not happened.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I appreciate that. And happy that you guys figured it out. You know, a lot of people didn't, but you guys stayed on top. So I'm going to start with the panel. We will start with Judy first. She'll have a question. Please make the questions brief because it's quite a few guys that will be asking questions. You can address it either to Chin or Asante, or they'll choose which one will answer. So we'll start with the first.
Okay. Welcome, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you here and to be in your presence. I was curious to know if you could share some information about Soundtrack 63. I was really impressed with that project, and I was looking at your website. I was just curious to know how you got involved in that.
You want to jump
this
in,
this could
bro?
Be answered by either gentleman.
Yeah, certainly. In 2012, Chin actually had an opportunity to have to talk to a company called 651 Arts, which is a black nonprofit arts organization in Brooklyn. And since then they've become like family, but if I remember correctly, they wanted to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. And Chin had been in talk with their director, their council, to do some kind of programming. And at that time, shortly before that, we had became roommates. And I remember when Chin came home and he told me about the opportunity, and we just started brainstorming. And at that particular time, I didn't think it would lead to anything. I was just lending ear to my roommate and, trying to brainstorm with him. But I remember during that time, we had just talked about the fact that rather than doing a band, because initially I think it was just going to be like a little, you know, like a quintet situation, and they play a few movement songs, you know, some spirituals and songs that deal with resistance. But I was like, well, rather than doing that, why don't we like try to put together an orchestra? And why don't we tap into just the Rolodex of all of these phenomenal musicians we've had the opportunity to come in contact with since we've been in New York? And then somehow or another, you know, we're educators as well. And we thought to ourselves, well, this would be a wonderful opportunity, especially if we can get a few dollars to do it, to put together something that was fully immersive and like a fully immersive documentary for millennials, something that was fast moving, fast hitting, edgy, that centered hip hop, but that told the history of our people. And it didn't just stop with, the civil rights movement and culminate with Barack Obama as the president. But we wanted to utilize something again that told history from our perspective and that kind of challenged the narrative. And that's kind of how Soundtrack 63 was initially born.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we were asking the question, you know, how far, you know, people say that we've come so far. You know, we're asking, well, how far have we actually come? And we were just juxtaposing, you know, history to the contemporary time, you know, and showing that, you know, a lot of things that have happened over the course of history still continue to happen now. Yes, there's been, you know, evolution. Yes, there's been change. Yes, there's been some improvement. But, you know, let's be honest, you know, really looking at where things are and not necessarily telling people what to do with this piece, but asking people to find their place in creating change and manifesting change. And to be able to do that with our gift, with our art, you know, it ended up culminating in this, and, you know, it exists now. As Asante said, it's this multimedia, it's a multimedia exploration of Black history in America that includes this 18-piece orchestra. And if you ever see it, you know, it's this huge backdrop of images that we've curated across history. And the great thing about it that we really love is that we were able to curate music that aligns with each era of history. So, you know, as you're listening, you're going through different eras of history and hearing what was on the radio during that time, but then you're also seeing what was happening socially, politically, you know, and culturally with our people here in America, and in some instances, actually around the world in the diaspora. So it's been a labor of love. It's been a heavy lift to get it off the ground, but we've been blessed to share it at some premier institutions around the country.
Wow, that is just fantastic and powerful and so inspiring. And I really hope that you're in the school system and showing this to the children, because they're not really listening to jazz, not unless they are classically trained or they're in a program. So I think what you're doing, especially in the heart of Bed-Stuy, is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's why it was important for us to juxtapose jazz with hip hop, a blues and trap. And we make it a point to do that because I'm a jazz musician. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I was raised by jazz musicians, but I'm a child of hip hop as well. And it's not a far-fetched listen. It's just that so many of our people are not exposed to their history. You know, right. So if you go into classrooms and Black kids don't know Black people create, they don't know they created rock and roll, mm-hmm. or blues. You know, so it's just a matter of exposure and keeping it hip, because sometimes with history, you know, history becomes a museum piece and it gets boring because it's, you know, it's no life in it. So
right. I didn't discover jazz until I was into college, and I fell in love with Oscar Peterson. So it's like Oscar Peterson every day. You know, I have him on my phone. So I think that the kids really need to see that, and they will have an appreciation for it. I played it a lot in the classroom. You know, I was a teacher for a while, and I played it a lot in the classroom, and it calmed them down. You know, the music from Coltrane. They liked Miles Davis for some reason. I don't really understand, but I like Miles Davis, you know, classical stuff. But I didn't like his fusion, you know, the new stuff. But I still have the Yellow Album, Backstreet Betty, you know, Backseat Betty, you know. But it's really a beautiful thing if you can get into it, especially with the children.
We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you know, Miles put out a hip hop album.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
He sure did. Thank you. Thank you, Judy. So we're going to go on to Greg. Appreciate that. Greg.
I want to, you know, Judy touched on quite a few of the questions I had, because I was also just taken aback in a good way, in a great way, by Soundtrack 63. I mean, number one, you know, I was born in 1963, so automatically that drew me, you know, right in. But, you know, just everything you stated, everything that was in the film, the music, like you said, it jumped through, it interwove in different parts of my life. You get to see the changes in the music, and you always connect me. I'm a musically driven person. I don't play anything, but just love music, and different songs bring out different things in history that happened during that time period. And that's what this did to me when I'm watching it, and it blew me away. And also, again, it's something you guys, you presented from a teaching perspective. And also, like you just mentioned, you know, we historically just knock down any genres. They don't really exist to what I say to real artists. We blur the lines because it's all art to me. It's all you know, where you go. Like, shoot, Miles even was ready to play with Hendrix. So, you know, they didn't care. You know, music, pure music was pure music, and that's what you guys brought out here. What was the main inspiration? And I guess both of you can take, you know, a swing at this one, but what was the main inspiration to you? Was it the performing aspect or the teaching aspect, or was it both?
Definitely both. Definitely both. I mean, I think, you know, we're both artists and performers and musicians at heart. And so, I mean, shoot, what artist or performer doesn't want to play some classic songs that are their favorites or original songs with an orchestra? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a dream. But to be able to do it in this education context, I mean, you know, we made Soundtrack 63 with our younger selves in mind and with the young people that we teach, because, you know, like Asante was saying, we came together as educators. That's really how we met. And so we were on the front lines really seeing how young people responded in the classroom to a lot of this information. And they don't respond to it because the way that it's presented is often stale and outdated. And so we said, you know, how can we upgrade this to really connect with them and really help them see the parallels, you know, in history to contemporary society, but also get them interested just in what has happened before them so they have a context for the present. And so, you know, that was huge inspiration for creating this piece. And we were very intentional, you know, in splicing and connecting jazz and hip hop. Like there's a piece by Ray Charles that's in Soundtrack 63, and it's called Where Can I Go? And, you know, Where Can I Go is like this quintessential Ray Charles record. And we use it when we're discussing the Montgomery bus boycott. And on the screen, you know, mm-hmm. you're seeing folks who were boycotting in Montgomery and just that entire episode that happened in history. But what we do in the middle of it is we break. And Asante did this amazing arrangement where he broke Ray Charles's, you know, kind of jazz arrangement into this trap beat feel. And I come out and I'm rhyming over it. And I'm basically reiterating and adding on to what Ray Charles is saying, but in verse. In a flow that young people are going to feel. And it's got, you know, these trap drums and sounds going as well. And then we go back to the jazz just to show them, like, look, you know, what you're doing comes out of this. And to really can even connect the generations, you know, to make this an intergenerational experience. So, I mean, for us, for me, in anything I can do that involves not only my creativity, but also my scholarship, my love of history, my love of my people and culture, like, that's a win. Like, that's where I want to live. And for me, for us, you know, Soundtrack gave us the opportunity to use all those dexterities, you know, not just be an artist and be on stage, but to really dig in and pay homage to our ancestors, you know, deal with history and be educators, but also, you know, flex our creative muscle as well.
Mm. Awesome. Thank you. We're going to go to Ernest next. But before I go to Ernest, do you guys want to play a little bit of music first? That way the next two panel members will have something else to add to their questions. If everyone is in agreement with that, we'd like to hear some of your music right now. Yeah, while you get that ready, Ernest, you can ask your next question while I get that, while I prepare for that.
Oh, okay.
That's cool? Yeah, because I got to get ready for that.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So
awesome.
One, it's a pleasure and honor to speak to you gentlemen today. I actually happen to have been born in New Orleans, in Jefferson Parish, but I also play musical instruments as well. And so I would love to actually work with you all doing personality assessments. And I kind of broke them down in musical terms of brass, woodwinds, percussion. And voice. And so what I would like to ask is, what musical instrument speaks to your individual personalities? And then I have a follow-up question after that. This is just an opportunity for us to get to know you and the audience get to know you as well.
That's a heavy question. I know Asante might be, you know, getting something ready. I'll jump in and just say, for me, well, you know, I'm a songwriter, vocalist, MC, and so for me, the things that speak to me the most, definitely, you know, voice as an instrument, but then the drum. You know, the drum is like the drum is my friend, it's my companion. And we look at ourselves, you know, one of our taglines is we're innovative Afro-futuristic griots, and you know, if you know anything about the West African griot tradition, you know, griots use several instruments. You know, from the kora to the ngoni to, and then of course drums. But the drums, you know, are what command the space. The drums are what you use when you call your ancestors. The drums are what you use usually
yes.
call in response rituals, you know, to connect with people. And we know the power of the drum. So for me, the drum is really, I think, because it's so grounding. yeah, like that speaks to my soul. That's at the center of me.
Yeah, can I just cut in a little bit? I just need some clarification on the term griot.
Sure, definitely. So griot is actually a French word, and there are a few other words in other West African languages, like Jali is in Mali from the Mende people, and then you have there's Jali, there's Juel. Juel is in Wolof from the Senegalese folks, but a griot is essentially a storytelling musician. In several West African cultures, griots, sat at the foot of kings, and they would hold the stories of a community, so they would know the story of each clan. They would know, the story of triumph or of loss in war. They would know just the epic tale of a particular society. And they would transfer that information through song and poetry, so the children would understand, oh, this is the people that you come from. This is who, where your people descended from. And these are the most important stories you need to understand about your culture. And so many people say that the griot is the ancient predecessor of the MC, or just, the blues artist or whomever, because it's that same principle that you see happening in all of our music, really.
Okay. Thank you for that. Amazing.
Thank you. So, Asante, are you ready, or should we go to the next question?
I'm ready. I'm not sure how good you'll be able to hear, though, but I'll play it as loud as I can.
Okay. We're ready.
So that's just a little excerpt, you know what I'm saying? A little peek song we did called "Gimme That."
Yes.
I don't know how well you can hear, but
no, we heard it.
Yeah, but that's my song, though. I was going to ask you.
It's amazing music.
Let me throw it on for you right quick, you did, since you mentioned it yesterday.
Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. So, Ernst, you have anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, well, actually, I would have liked for Asante if he could, name an instrument that speaks to your personality. And I did have a follow-up question for both of you.
An instrument, what I'm saying? Well, I'm from New Orleans, land of brass bands, so I love the sound of horns.
Well, myself. Yeah.
Yeah, I love
horns. Me too.
I'm a saxophone player, a world winner, so I play the flute as well. But
I like the strings myself.
I rock with the strings too, you dig, but I love the wind instruments because I don't know, it just reminds me of wind. It reminds me of spirit directly communicating and speaking, and it's so much you hear and feel so much life being translated through wind instruments. It's like a voice.
So my follow-on question, and based upon the conversations that we've been having about how music, you know, speaks to our soul and how it moves from generation to generation, the importance of the griot, telling our stories. What song, either present or past, reflects the feelings that you have right now in our social and political climate?
Oh, that's easy for me. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's an album. I think it's one of the greatest albums of all time. It's the greatest concept.
Same, bro.
It's the greatest concept of the album. I don't know what I'm going to say, but I was going to say Marvin Gaye, What's Going On.
Marvin Gaye, of course. I knew you were going to say
it. Yes.
I knew it.
Yes.
It's the 50th anniversary.
Yes. It sure is.
I didn't even know that, but that's one of my favorite albums of all time. It's inspired me to no end. I think it's a perfect, if such a thing exists, it's a perfect album. And I don't want to say unfortunately, but it still is relevant as ever, and it was very prophetic, you know.
And Marvin
Gaye is just a phenomenal musician and soul and vessel, and just musically, composition wise, it's a great album. And it's so like the story of how it came about is very interesting as well, because, you know, Motown and Berry Gordy, they originally didn't want to put it out because they didn't want to put out message albums or message material. They wanted to just make pop songs and things that felt good. And they Marvin Gaye ended up leaking the album, or else we would have never got it. And it caught fire and it caught steam. And then Motown ended up getting behind it. But yeah, to me, that's like one of the greatest. That's probably next to Stevie. Something with Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life,
right?
For me, but Marvin Gaye,
definitely.
What's going on? Yeah,
that's what's up. Yeah, from beginning to end, actually. Yeah.
Right,
from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's true, Judy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
definitely,
yes,
definitely.
I mean, there's not much more to say about that because I'm, you know, when he started talking, I was like, I already know my brother.
Like,
I already know what's coming.
I was like, that's like, easy. That's easy.
Right, yeah. Right.
We aligned on that. I mean, we
pride ourselves. Good music.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's about being timeless.
Right.
You know, like you got to create something that's going to transcend. And I guess the fortunate and unfortunate thing about that album is that it's timeless and it's relevant even now, 50 years
created. Yes.
You know, it's just as relevant, you know, in our contemporary society. But when you create classic timeless sounds like that, that's what happens. You know,
absolutely. Yes.
It's always gonna resonate. So
Thank you guys for that. So Gene Edwards, would you like to come in now? Do you have a question prepared for them? You come off mute, Gene.
How you doing?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm off mute, yeah.
Okay.
That was the track that I was speaking. Yeah, that's the same track I was speaking about initially during the mic check. That I heard it, you know, at various places during, you know, different times, and I always thought it was like it sounded like a big jubilation, and I just never knew who the composers were. So I'm honored to have them, you know, here on the show today. I was reading through your bio, and it talked about some of the A-list artists that you all have worked with in the past. Now, you know, I'm born and raised in the Bronx, and I'm an elected official representing the South Bronx. So I want to know what it's like to work have worked with one of my favorite artists, the Blastmaster KRS-One, who represents the South Bronx well. So talk about that experience, please.
I mean, I had a chance as a relatively young MC. I was working with a band actually from Pittsburgh, with some of my hip hop mentors are from, and they put together a performance in Pittsburgh, and it went from Pittsburgh to, we went to Cleveland and Cincinnati, but you know, KRS-One was on the bill when we were in Pittsburgh, and I got a chance to sit at his feet and connect with him and build with him before he went on stage, because you know, we were sharing the stage. We actually opened for him, but for me, getting a chance to one talk to him and vibe one on one, just to connect with him, you know, with somebody that has such a storied just legacy in hip hop, and then to watch him work on stage. I mean, there are things that he's done in his stage show. You know, if you've ever seen his stage show, it's masterful, that I've taken as a young artist, you know, and used in my own way, you know, just because it's such a it is such an exercise in master of ceremony, like for real, you know, from start to finish, you know, the way, and if you ever hear him talk about it, the way that he analyzes a venue, a crowd, really understanding who's in the crowd and what he should be doing and how he works the stage in order to make his message and his music resonate, you know, the order of the songs, all those things. So he helped me understand from a very young age the science behind performance and connecting with people, that it isn't just, you know, you're not just an artist hopping on stage and, you know, people are going to automatically love what you do and you just get up there and you rock out. Like there's a real specific science to how you make this happen. And he's one of the best I've ever seen to this day. Wow. Yeah. So yeah, just phenomenal. The Blastmaster. Awesome. Incredible.
Definitely. Gene, do you have another question you'd like to address them? Okay. Walter, do you have any? Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You good? Okay. So if you come up with anything else, just chime in. Walter, would you like to chime in as well?
Yeah. I just want to just mentioned that on a lot of your, not a lot, but some of your content in the background, there were African dancers. Did y'all guys ever visit Africa?
Yeah, many times.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Chin is like half African. His wife is Ghanaian. So
all right, Accra.
We have a direct entry point into the continent, but we've gone a number of times together just as a family doing work, and we've both gone independently to different parts of Africa, and it's a subject and a continent and a place we could talk about, you know, to no end.
Yeah, same here.
We're passionate about, and you know, we're both, which I think is a central point in our synergy, we're both essentially, even though we don't articulated as such often, because it's kind of like a given, but we're both Pan-Africanists. You know, we both come from that perspective that we're our optimal selves, we're our best selves, when we're tapping into the source of who and what our people are.
I know, to tell you a story, my first trip to Africa, the first one, I've been to Africa maybe 30 times.
Oh man, so, wow. You got us beat, bro.
It was working, bro. I didn't even take pictures. But anyway, my first trip there, I went to a wedding, all right? African wedding, all right? And you know, the drums started beating, you know, anyway, when they started celebrating, the drums started. And it's like, I don't know if you saw Cedric, he did like, this move where like the feet would start first. So my feet started moving first. Then my left, my right, my left feet, then my upper body, and then everything, my total body was just moving. And it was such a natural reaction to those drums that, I mean, it was just, it had to be ingrained in my DNA.
It is.
Because I was right on beat. There was no, it was just like it was nothing.
Yeah, exactly. That's the source. That's the mama.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing, man. You just reminded me of that. Is that, you know, we have it in our DNA. You talk about rhythm. We have it in our DNA.
It's true.
That is so true. So, guys, I want to step in a little bit. You've had quite a few amazing projects. Can you tell us about your partnering with Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, and the Apollo Theater and 651 Arts? You know, those creatives that you've done on those levels, especially Carnegie Hall. You know, that's, I remember, you know, Billie Holiday, that was like the height of her career towards the end of, you know, her life. So Carnegie Hall, you know, we weren't in there at one point. So can you just tell us how that experience was for you?
Incredible. I mean, you know, we've done different projects with all of those institutions. With 651 Arts, you know, they supported Soundtrack 63 and getting it up on its feet. Lincoln Center, we've done Soundtrack 63 there a number of times for young people and intergenerational audiences, and you know, other shows and other projects with them. And Carnegie Hall, Carnegie Hall has been really great to us. They've been a blessing to us. We've done Musical Explorers there, which Justin actually played drums with us at Musical Explorers at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, he loved that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a program where they bring together artists from all over the world.
Right.
Different genres for young people. And that's amazing. But I think the thing we're doing with Carnegie Hall that's been really impactful is a program or a project called Make a Joyful Noise.
Right.
And that's a new project that we premiered a documentary with Carnegie Hall in May 26th, around Make a Joyful Noise. And then we just did a performance, the first live performance of Make a Joyful Noise music at Lincoln Center. And Make a Joyful Noise for us, it's like an unapologetic expression, exploration of Black joy and all of its dimension and complexity. But it's done through music and through visuals. Mm-hmm. And we're celebrating Black joy.
Right.
You know, but Black joy is so many different things, you know, from spirit to pain to resistance to celebration to love to transformation. But we work with Carnegie Hall to build that project. And so it culminated in an album, a studio album. We're working on a visual album, you know, like a collection of music videos that make a short film. We did a documentary already, and we finished a curriculum as well, which we just spent the last 2 weeks teaching to teachers around the world through a Carnegie Hall program. Make a Joyful Noise in Carnegie Hall has been a godsend. It's been a blessing.
That is a blessing. Thank you for that. Asante, do you want to add something to it, or can we go into another song?
Let's keep it moving.
All right.
Keep it moving.
Introduce the song. Introduce the song first.
Yeah.
A little bit about it.
On the theme of Carnegie Hall and Make a Joyful Noise, this is actually one of the songs we developed for that offering and for that album and during the pandemic, and it's called Black Butterflies. So I'll just play
title. Yes.
Play an excerpt of that. Sneak peek, Black Butterfly. That's new. It's fresh out the
album. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. You hear that, people? Yeah. Make sure you cop their music on all streaming platforms. Check out their YouTube pages, IG, and Facebook. Soul Science Lab. We just have another member that just joined in. Big Sween. He's a entrepreneur, retired sanitation worker, and the owner of Johnny Roof's Catering Services, and also Justin's uncle. Come on in,
Chris. Hey, Big Swing, what it do?
Fellas, beautiful. I love what I'm hearing. Great stuff.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I will definitely cop.
Hey.
I got a question for you. Where do you feel your music is phenomenal, right? Are you more well-received here or abroad?
Wow. Good question, yeah.
That's it. That's a tough one. I mean, I would say as Soul Science Lab, I don't know. I mean, I know over my career, I think I've been more received in like the grassroots community and overseas, definitely. Okay. And not necessarily, you know, in American and Western popular culture, so to speak. Okay. But you know, I think that the music that we make and the music that we're making now, I definitely think is gonna resonate here and really everywhere. You know, honestly, I think it's gonna resonate everywhere just because I think the world's vibration is ready for it, no matter where you are.
Absolutely. Timing is everything. That's for sure. Right. And no greater time for us as a people, mm-hmm. to unite and to do things, right? And I want to also ask you the connection to the motherland. Mm. Do you see the connection being made with Western artists and artists over there getting better? Are we connecting more with each other sonically?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we're just in a scenario and a situation now where we're in a global community, where the barriers to connecting are a lot less because of the
technology,
the digital nature of just like communication, and so. You know, I know I listen to Afrobeats. I've been listening to a lot of Afrobeats lately. And to me, Afrobeats are like the latest iteration of like global popular black music. And the dope thing about art is it opens up a conversation. It opens up an interaction and an interfacing for all those who choose to partake and all those who choose to enjoy. So I'm extremely hopeful about what I see happening with black people everywhere in the diaspora being able to like have unapologetic, authentic, and intentional conversations with each other to understand what our commonalities are, but also what our unique points are, and to arrive at a shared idea about what a world can look like for ourselves. But to simply answer your question, yeah, like we're in a lot more communication, and Chink can tell you a little bit more. I know, like right before the pandemic happened, he went to Ghana for the year of return, which was a huge calling home of different African nations of black people in the diaspora to ignite or reignite these conversations.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, flat out, yes. Like, we'll get way more connected. The year to return, you know, that happened 2019 and then 2020, where it seemed like everybody and their mama from here was in Ghana for the year to return. One thing I got to see on the ground was that, you know, people might ask, well, how did that happen? How was that clarion call made so clear and so many people ended up there? And what I noticed and what I saw, similar to what Asante was saying, was the connection to Afrobeat and the art. It's one thing to make that, you know, to make a political pan-African call and say, you know, come home. We want you to come home so that we can, you know, build economically, politically, socially, culturally, you know, that's one wavelength. But when the music goes out and the art and the culture go out and people are vibing and connecting on it, like, oh, this is, you know, this is a vibe, like, you know, and really, really feeling it. You know, you saw Afrobeat gaining a lot of traction and popularity on this side of the pond.
Absolutely.
And that was the clarion call to let folks over here say, wait a minute. So, you know, one, this music is phenomenal. I see these African artists doing really well. They're showcasing, you know, where they come from. Like, maybe we should actually be going to check out what's there. And what I saw when I was on the ground in Accra was that you had like young black millennials who, you know, never thought about coming to the continent before, but who were there and saw a whole different side of it. And who was so open because of what, you know, not only had been shown to them on TV, but when they, in social media, but when they got there, it was like, there's so many opportunities to connect, like financially, yes, politically, you know, as entrepreneurs, culturally, you know, and artistically. And so, yeah, man, I think like it was hard when the pandemic happened because that energy felt like it was stifled because it was so powerful and palpable and popping. Like when I came back, it was like, oh man, we all about to go to Africa for real.
Let me tell you, I was listening about a year ago. I was hearing a lot of big records with that African
list
to it, right? And I'm saying, and you know, a lot of them, you know, they're crossing over a little bit, and there's nothing wrong with that. I like it. But for a person like me, I've always been an underground cat. Like I'm Mos Def or Talib Kweli. I'm in that vein of listening, right? So of course we, you know, people want to make money and they want to be, and they want their art to be recognized, right? But my question is the underground connecting in those places? Like I could see the popular stuff crossing over and artists trying to come a little bit more Western style just to make it on the airwaves here. But is that underground making the connection as well? That's really
and
what I was
I'll answer it again and say yes, definitely. I think just across the board, you know, the barriers don't exist as much. It's easier to connect and more opportunities exist for those connections to occur. So and really, you know, these kinds of connections, the seeds for these connections have been going on since before. But if we're talking about hip hop specifically, you know, definitely like late 90s, early 2000s, even I myself making connections with folks in the underground and then that just continuing to build. So I think it's in totality. I think we're just receiving each other a lot better. And both of our cultures are maturing, you know, in a way that we can embrace one another and connect and collaborate with one another, you know, as our whole selves and be appreciated as, you know, from who we are.
One last thing. For me, I'm getting into listening to more global artists than artists here because I'm seeing the unfiltered stuff and the appreciation for the art is so much more, you know, especially with hip hop. I don't think we appreciate it the way we should. And when you look globally, hip hop, you know, is beloved all over the planet. In Japan and all of these places, they kind of hold on to our art form more than we do. And so for me, I started to get connected with artists abroad a little bit more because I was seeing something better and I was seeing what drew me to hip hop as a kid or to that music, to the art form. I'm seeing that in global artists more than I'm seeing it in the artists here.
Yeah, I agree, you know, this is Judy. I agree, you know, on the radio stations, like I won't mention the radio stations, they're not playing the global music. They're playing, it seems like they're playing the same R&B music over and over again. And you don't really get to hear the beautiful, you know, Angelique Kidjo or Yoso Ndour. You don't get to hear them. So I was wondering what your opinion is of the hip hop industry today. Chen or, you know, Asante, either one could answer that question.
You want to jump in on that one, bro?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my bad. I was talking, but I had it on mute. My bad. It happens. It happens.
Definitely.
I was just saying the reason for that is simple. You know, even going back to your observations, Big Sween, I believe it was you just talking about, like, appreciating international hip-hop because they're kind of, like, preserving the roots of the intention of why these things were created. But, you know, you got to keep in mind, like, Clear Channel, these large corporations basically curate and decide what everybody listens to. Like, it's a few individuals who have a monopoly on radio stations and decide what people listen to. And so if you're kind of dependent on those places to like curate your musical taste, you're going to be dissatisfied and malnourished. And I think for a long time that was the case, but we have an opportunity right now to democratize what we listen to and to choose what we listen to. And we're in a space of time where, we have the opportunity to be a lot more intentional about what we choose to intake, whether that's like watching Netflix or tapping into a streaming service. With that being said, the state of hip hop is such that we don't own our music a lot of times. And I was just looking at a documentary about Frankie Lyman's, you know, Why Do Fools Fall in Love, and the fact that, you know, he was basically
on Netflix.
Even that film, I always say, like, I don't be too mad at, like, movies, even though they're produced by Hollywood, and a lot of times they're produced by the same entities and factions that rape the artists. If nothing else, they're an entry point into having some conversations and studying yourself. But after I watched that, the movie, and I'm sure you all have seen it, it kind of makes a comedy out of a very tragic subject matter.
Right. It sure did.
And I didn't really care for that, but it was entertaining because, you know, I appreciate Lorenz Tate and Vivica Fox and the rest of the actors and actresses and the music.
Yes.
And like I said, I did a deep dive. I do my homework. It's nobody else's responsibility to do homework for me.
You have to do your research. Yeah. Because, you know, Hollywood's going to tell you what they want you to know anyway. So.
Yeah. And they have a vested interest in deceiving me. So I don't expect anybody to tell me the truth. That's my responsibility. But anyway, I bring that up to say you studied the history and see Frankie Lyman's, he was molested and abused by the music industry at a very young age, and his genius was stolen from him, and he died a very tragic death by the time he was 25, and he didn't own any of his musical material. And it's not an isolated incident, and when you can look at a number of individuals and see the same story, that means it's systemic. It means it's systematic. And so there's a reason why there's a disconnection. You know, I'm trying to, like, make a connection without being too long-winded between the fact that young kids today don't even understand or know the origins of hip-hop. We've taught in the school system in New York. We've taught in the Bronx. And black babies in the Bronx don't even know hip-hop comes from the Bronx.
We've taught in school.
Black babies don't know that rock and roll is there. So, of course, there's not a connection, and there's not an ownership. There's not a thing like, let me protect this thing that I created, because they don't even know they created. And there's no connection to the history. So in terms of the hip hop industry is owned and kind of maintained by individuals who don't have our best interest at heart. And if we follow the money, and I'm not trying to get too crazy, if we follow the money, some of these families are connected to the slave trade. So the slave trade and the exploitation continues today. So I just say that to say we have a unique opportunity right now in not operating in the mainstream. We no longer even have to be popular or operate in the mainstream in order to make a lot of money. There are a lot of examples of, like, artists right now who are able to tap into their audiences to retain ownership of what they do, not necessarily be mainstream, not necessarily be popular, and have, like, really good lives. And I think we have to begin to put more stock into those kind of things and use our dollars and use our attention to defund people, movements, corporations, and you know, entities that don't have our best interest at heart. And it's only through doing that actual change can happen that represents the true will of our people in a sustainable and healthy way.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Thank you for that question, Judy.
Thank you.
Chris, did you have one last thing, or Ernest?
I just wanted to jump in and say, you know, as an artist that I followed, I don't know if any of you recognize, familiar with her. Her name was Yuna. And she was produced.
A Muslim sister, right?
I loved her. She was produced by Pharrell. And Pharrell was making a lot of inroads with trying to transfer some of that music from that diaspora over to the West. But I think he was a little bit ahead of time. Like, you know, like I said, everything is timing with some of this stuff. But, you know, so I've been listening for a while, and I love her. The stuff she does is real good.
Yeah.
So that's why I was trying to make that connection.
And just to add to that.
No, go ahead. You got it. Santi.
Okay. All right. You know, this thing is an idea whose time has come. you know, we talked about timing, and we musicians, so we understand rhythm. You can't, you know, sometimes you can't be ahead of the beat, you can't be behind the beat, or it's wrong. You got to be right on it. And so when we're talking about Afro beats or just world culture or underrepresented people having a stage right now, this is an idea whose time has come, and you know, we just have to activate the moment and utilize our artistry to do what we have to do. Like Marvin Gaye and them, they did what they had to do in their particular age. Earth, Wind & Fire did what they had to do. Right. In the 90s, you had artists, like, I think every artist, every era, the artists have to heed the creative calling and do like Nina Simone said, you know, reflect the times, but also project a vision about what's capable and what's possible. And I feel like here at Soul Science Lab, we just take that very seriously, and we get up and go to work every day to help people create and you know, fashion visions that are in their best interest, hopefully. You know, that's always the goal.
Yeah. I appreciate that. We, you know, thank you, panel, for the questions. Right now, guys, I've been posting in the chat room, but can you give us or tell our audience members, because this will be rebroadcast on Sunday, where to find you in the near future for live performances?
Yeah, Michelle.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I have one more question.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I understand that y'all guys have classes for adults and kids. Mm-hmm. Could you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for that question. One of the things that the pandemic did for us was we've always been educators, always been teaching young people about hip hop history and culture, but then also like songwriting, music production, performance. And the pandemic forced us to build digital course offerings. And out of that came Soul Science University. And so, you know, if you visit Soul Science University, you're going to find a suite of classes that for educators act as professional development, as for young people and for parents. It's an opportunity for young people to delve deeper into a love or a passion they may have for, you know, making beats, writing rhymes, you know, learning how to perform. But it's a step by step. We call it page to the stage. You know, it's like, you know, step by step building blocks on how to make a lot of this creativity happen in your own way. But we give you the expertise we've developed throughout our careers over the years. And so, again, it's at Soul Science University. It comes out of this our years of teaching students in classrooms, you know, Asante doing band classes and music production classes, me doing music production classes, songwriting courses, and we put all of that into digital courses that are on our site. So,
awesome. Yeah, awesome. Mm-hmm. I know I would, you know, recommend anyone, you know, if you can see them live, you know, the energy that's on the stage is incredible. You know, the whole band, every band member that is participating, you know, when you guys did the event for the children at Lincoln Center, these mm-hmm. kids was jumping up out of their seats. You have everyone participates. And that's what I love about you guys is that you have everyone's attention. There's not one person in their seats at your events, and it's just amazing the energy that you provide, and your music is incredible.
Thank you so much.
Yes. You know, any more questions before we get into them telling us where to find them up next? Anyone else have anything real quick? Mm-hmm. No, we're good. So, guys, tell us what your schedule is, you know. Oh, Marge has a question. Walter, do they work with groups? Yeah, 5 years old. Yes, they have a young, you know, they do have children, right? When you perform at Lincoln Center, it's for kids.
Oh, yeah. And then look, we got a show coming up. I know, you know, we was getting into it, but it's a perfect little segue. We have a show coming up on August 14th, and it's a kids show. It's a young person show. So right. If you're in New York City, you know what I'm saying? Like, visit our website. It's a different kind of process to attend the show because of COVID protocols. Nonetheless, we are outside. And if you visit our site or follow us on social media, you can get tickets for it. But it's a young folks show because, you know what I'm saying? Soul Science, We love the kids. You did. We love everybody. You know what I'm saying? So we got something for everybody. But
is that the Lincoln Outdoors event?
It's gonna be outdoors. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Lincoln Center, guys.
Yeah, we did one outdoors.
Oh, that's nice.
Last week at this park, we did one for the adults.
Right.
We're doing a show for the kids on August 14th. So yeah, bring your babies through. You know what I'm saying? Bring yourself.
All right. That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
It's gonna be cool. Yeah. Yep.
So we still have a few more minutes, so I want to be greedy, you know.
Yeah.
I want to hear another song. How about you guys? Yeah, yeah.
Sure, want to throw in that prop? Definitely, definitely. Yeah,
let's go.
Let's go, man.
I don't know. What should I play, Chen?
Look, somebody's asking for Black Butterfly again. That's a sneak peek, y'all.
Yeah.
That was.
Wow. What
we're going to buy that, no doubt.
Yeah. Definitely support them. You know, our audience. Thank you, audience. Make sure you check Soul Science out on their websites for their courses.
Wow.
You know, they have adult courses, children, music, everything. Just check out their whole profile on Soul Science Lab. They are also on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, Soul Science Lab. So please support these young brothers. They are doing incredible things in the community, and they have amazing music. Producers, writers, you name it, worldwide, all around the world.
Global.
Global, that's right, global.
Yeah, we're going to capture those links in the show notes anyway.
Yes.
We push it out on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Definitely. So for those that will not listen to the rebroadcast, go to soulsciencelab.com.
There you go.
Their music is on all streaming platforms.
It's true.
That's right. Yeah. And especially their videos on YouTube. You know, it shows, you know, everything about them, the Afrocentric side of them, civil rights, everything in there. Yeah. You'll really enjoy it.
So I got a number for y'all. You know what I'm saying? As we close out, I give you one.
Yes.
So,
All right.
And this is from the Plan for Paradise album, and it's called Supernatural.
Okay. Supernatural, Plan for Paradise, y'all.
Oh, after this commercial. Supernatural off Plan for Paradise. If y'all haven't checked that out, please listen to it when you get a chance so you can really hear it.
It's already released. It's already out
on all streaming platforms.
We appreciate that. Yes, so someone just asked where to get it. So they're on all streaming platforms, iTunes, Pandora, wherever you get your music from.
Nice. Apple Music.
You can download Apple Music, but you know, Spotify. the old school people want to know.
You want to know,
outside of digital, do you have CDs? Okay? Because some people like them for souvenirs. I'm one of them.
I think we got a few CDs left. I know I do. Mm-hmm. But
and people are coming out with LPs again. You guys going to put some music on LPs?
Yeah.
Make
a joyful noise. Okay. Planning on pressing some.
Okay. Vinyls. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They also have a shop on their website where you could purchase their merchandise as well. They have t-shirts and other items. That's right. Shout it out, guys. Shout out whatever you want right now in the last few seconds.
Hey, yes, hey, I want to jump in. Gene, we need to do something up in the Bronx, Gene. We get some music going and get some food going and get these people
looking
out there to the tracks. You know what I mean?
Oh, so that would really, be really nice. Yeah. Yep.
Greg said A-track. Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah, no A-track. I mean,
no A-track, girl. Yeah, Gene, Gene is the man in the Bronx. We'll hook up with him.
All right. What
you guys, yes. So, Walter, you want to close it out? Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, thank you to the panel. Let me
just thank Jen Lo and Asante Amin of Soul Science Lab. I mean, y'all guys were great. Just great. I mean, it's an honor to have y'all guys on the show. I'm glad that we have the young folks out there like yourselves representing, and you're doing a hell of a job. All right. So anyway, this is the end of the show. As Michelle indicated earlier, we're going to be pushing this out as a rebroadcast on Sunday, and you can find it wherever you get your podcast. It's free. All right. Also want to thank our panel. And y'all guys know who you are. You know how bad I am with names. You know, hey, I'm just going to admit that right up front. You know, I earned that right anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm bad with names. But anyway, the big four, the big five. I love all y'all guys. Ernest, Judy, Greg, Chris.
Gene. And Gene, yes.
Yeah, keep in mind. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
It's a pleasure. Definitely.
Okay. But anyway, our handles are our website, www.thewaltweekly.com. On Instagram, The Walt Weekly Podcast. All right. On Twitter, at The Walt Weekly. And on Facebook, The Walt Weekly Podcast. All right. And our email is thewaltweekly@gmail.com. All right. Please follow. And I thank you guys. You have a great weekend. And cheers. And
amen.
Bless you.
Good night, right, everyone.
Good
take
night.
Care.
Good
stay
night.
Blessed.
Good night.
Make sure you buy that music, everyone. Take care. Have an awesome time. Peace and love. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.
Thank you.